I would never, ever in my life sit by and watch fascism rise without saying something, because that is what happened in Germany. Too many good Christian people didn't say a damn thing until it was too late.
Welcome to episode 14 of Inside Without Now, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with RefuseFascism.org. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of this podcast. We are at a stop everything moment in history. September 5th, we have called for united nationwide mass protests demanding Trump Pence out now. This day needs to be a significant outpouring, inspiring 60 days of struggle. If every attempt by the regime to subvert the election, to further repress protests, to implement new fascist measures is met with growing numbers demanding Trump Pence out now, we could force a different political equation going into the election, constraining Trump's ability to easily postpone or subvert the election. If masses of people are already in the streets over the 60 days running up to the election, and then the regime attempts to discount, challenge, or dismiss the results, we would be a people organized and mobilized to act in defiance that this not go down. And if we launch this struggle and increasingly tap into and mobilize the deeply held desire of millions to see the ouster of the fascist Trump-Pence regime, no one can say how far this can go or how fast. Today, we're going to get into how it is on each of us and all of us to make September 5th a broad-based united day, launching 60 days of struggle before the election. Today, we're sharing an interview with writer, theologian, vice president, and religious committee chair of the NAACP of Transylvania County, Reverend Dr. Carter Hayward. Then we will share an interview with actor Jody Sweetin in conversation with RNL co-host and co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, Sansara Taylor, to speak about her involvement with RefuseFascism.org and how she sees the importance of taking to the streets on September 5 to demand Trump Pence out now. This interview originally aired on the RNL show this past Thursday. Reverend Dr. Carter Hayward wrote, "It's time to resist the rising tide of fascism," which ran in the Transylvania Times on August 13th, and she has been part of organizing weekly Monday protests outside the Transylvania County Courthouse. She wrote, "The NAACP of Transylvania County will not tolerate in silence this authoritarian president and his enablers who are doing everything they can to divide us, stirring hatred among neighbors. This is, history warns, how fascism rises, slowly securing absolute power by exploiting people's fears, arousing hatred, branding truth as fake news, and scapegoating minority communities to persecute or expel." Here's the interview.
What inspired you guys to write the article?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background. It's the local chapter of the NAACP. We formed ourselves in 2014 in response to Reverend William Barber, who was at the time the head of the state of North Carolina's NAACP, and had begun having those Moral Monday protests in Raleigh inspired us, really. And then we had some Moral Monday protests in Asheville. Along the way, some of us, a handful of white and black people, we're a largely white town, as so many towns in the South are, but and so several black people and several white people got together and said, well, you know, we should just form a chapter of the NAACP. So we did, and we have been meeting monthly ever since. What's interesting, Sam, is that for a couple of years, we've been meeting. We have a religious affairs committee that I chair. We have a political action committee that Kathleen Barnes chairs. Tommy Kilgore is the president. He's an African-American, local guy, great guy. Kathleen and I are both white. We have an education committee chaired by an African-American woman, Sheila Mooney, and we have a healthcare committee chaired by Larry Goodwin. And committees have been active and they've met and we've done a good many things, but the organization as a whole has just kind of been floating along, and it was almost like it was waiting for this moment, because after the George Floyd murder, things just took off here. And because we had the NAACP and because we had been meeting on Mondays for about a year anyhow, with our signs about no justice, no peace, and healthcare for all, and just basic generic justice signs, custom made for the United States, but not really all that political in the sense that NAACP is a nonpartisan organization. So we didn't have a lot of dump Trump or stuff like that around. We just had healthcare and education and women's right to choose and anti-racism and all that stuff. And then came George Floyd, and then and the protests all over the nation. And then our Moral Mondays, which had been maybe 20 or 30 people every Monday standing at the courthouse, suddenly was 200. But we are racially, religiously, ethnically, and age-wise quite mixed, which is kind of wonderful.
Beautiful.
Very inspirational. Most of the leaders are the older people right now, but we're trying very hard to move this into the hands of those who are in their 20s and 30s and 40s. They are willing to pick this ball up and carry it on beyond November, regardless of what happens. Even if Trump is defeated, and we hope he is resoundingly defeated, and we hope our Senator Tillis is also resoundingly defeated, and we hope the Democrats take over all three branches of federal government. Nonetheless, we know that the problems are deeper than that. And so we've been doing a lot of reading together, studying together. I'm a part of two or three different groups, smaller groups of people to get together and talk about James Baldwin, or look at Ta-Nehisi Coates, or look at any number of liberation theologians through the Religious Affairs Committees. We've got a wonderful activist community. And then in terms of this particular article, when the feds moved into Portland, some of us, myself included, said, wait a minute, we simply cannot let this stand. We have got to look at what's really going on and start naming it. And we've had until then, most everybody in the organization was very reluctant to use the F word, fascism, because that can easily be dismissed as, oh my God, that's hyperbole, you know, we're not like Hitler, or we're not like this, that, or the other. And, you know, I got tired of that personally. I got tired of people saying it's different, because of course it's different. We're in a different century. We're in a different world. Not going to come along with swastikas and goose-stepping, probably. We're going to be having fascism like every other ism takes new shapes and new forms. So I was tired of saying it's not like that. We can't use that word. I thought, you know, we have got to start making this historical link. So I met with several members of the group and we decided, okay, go for it. I happened to be a writer. So they said, write it, Carter, and then we'll pass it out and see who signs it. I'm a theologian. I was went to Union Theological Seminary in New York City. I'm also an Episcopal priest. In the late 70s, early 80s, one of my professors was a woman named Dorothea Zola, and she was a liberation political, later a liberation theologian and a feminist from Germany, maybe 15 years my senior, which had put her in the Holocaust as a teenager. And she was a Christian. And she told me in the late 70s, early 80s, she said, you know, I made a commitment that I would never, ever in my life sit by and watch fascism rise without saying something. Because that is what happened in Germany. Too many good Christian people didn't say a damn thing until it was too late. And I had taught the books, I had taught all of Elie Wiesel's books when I was myself a seminary professor. And I remember vividly the book Night, in which he talks about the Jews who had escaped or who had figured out what was happening in the death camps, who would come back to the village in Hungary and nobody would believe them. And having these kind of conversations with my friends, you know, we're all saying, you know, yeah, we got to start saying these things. And even if we are seen as a bit over the top, we're intelligent people, we're compassionate people, we can make compassionate, intelligent cases for what we're saying. And people can hear us or not, but somebody needs to start saying what needs to be said, which is that we have got, at the very least, an authoritarian bully man working great evil in our nation and being supported even worse by a silent Senate and by people like William Barr and others who are aiding and abetting and handing him all the power he wants. And we are in a hugely dangerous moment of our history. And as the United States, because we are who we are in the world, even though we have declined rapidly and dramatically, and as we should have since Trump came to power, we still have a lot of power in the world. And with us, the world itself hangs in the balance. And so how can we just sit here and not say anything? So that's where the article came from. And we've gotten a good amount of very positive feedback from the people who've actually seen me on the street or in the grocery store and have spoken to me about it. Now, I'm sure there are some people out there who are shaking their heads saying, oh, those NAACP people are just over the top. The fact of the matter is, probably every one of us is, at this moment in time and space, a very liberal Democrat, maybe with some socialist aspirations, sort of the Bernie Sanders type people. I mean, I was a big Elizabeth Warren fan and supporter. I have a feeling everybody in the NAACP at this moment is probably a Democrat, but that hasn't always been the case, and it may not always be the case. We are not a bunch of really very radical people. We would be seen as a way left of center group of people. So we're not really alarmists. We're liberal Democrats. Some of us more progressive than others, but you know, we're all together at this moment.
I appreciate the fact that you all did this, especially the fact that you're acknowledging that you're not a radical group of people, that you're people that are just able to look at what is and have the courage to name it. And I think what we learn from history and what's in the article that you wrote is the importance of acting before it becomes too late.
Yes.
Before you lose the ability to speak and be the voice for the voiceless. And I think it's a really important and really precious thing when you were saying about what matters here is even more dangerous because we have so much power and influence. Yeah, and sure. What happens here affects the whole world. In fact, the future of life on this planet for any species.
That's right.
I think to have that broadness of mind and thinking, yes, about the lives of people here, but also about the lives of people around the world is really important. I think that you use the word bully in your piece. And I think that we've talked about in Refuse Fascism, the idea you have a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger. How dangerous is that?
Just unspeakably so. I think even people who cannot stand the man kind of dismiss him as a fool. And in many ways, he's exactly that. But he is a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear button. One of the things that we have to be alert to is that if he loses, and of course, as we see, he's doing everything in power to make sure he doesn't. But if he does, the man's going to try to burn the house down before he ever leaves office. And people like you and me and the people we all associate with have got to be aware of that. And we've got to try to act in such a way as to stop it. And I was reading about the group. I love the nonviolence, John Lewis, all of that is such an extraordinarily important part of this.
It's so important because it's how change has been made throughout history of this country, but also around the world. Even just, what was it, last week, Lebanon once again drove out their prime minister. Beautiful.
Yes.
By exercising the power of the people, raising the demand that tyrant needed to go.
Belarus is doing the same thing right now.
Exactly. One thing that this connects to is, what do you think is at stake with these elections? Just today, Kelly McEnany, the press secretary, was asked by a reporter. He said before he may not accept the results. What do you say? And she affirms he'll accept it when he'll decide whether he's going to accept it when it happens. What do you think is at stake with this election?
Well, and it's absurd, but it's just outrageous. I mean, we all know what he means when he says what he says. He'll accept it if he wins. If he doesn't, he won't. And everybody who's been awake for the last 4 years knows that. So I think we got to be prepared for the fact that he won't win, but he won't accept it. I mean, there's so many layers we could discuss this. First of all, I think Joe Biden's just right for this particular transition, even though I was not a supporter of Joe Biden. But when he got the nomination, when I saw why he got it, and when I realized when African Americans in South Carolina really moved that ball along, and I thought, you know, this is time for people like me to say yes to that. I think Joe Biden, because of his kind of laid back, certainly empathic, down to earth, just plain old human being personality, he's almost the antithesis of Donald Trump in terms of being every man. And Jill last night, too, when she spoke, I thought, you know, many people in this United States can identify with those people, talking about childhood education and talking about having lost two children. They're real. I think he and she are right for this. I think Kamala Harris is great. She also was not my choice, as I said. Elizabeth Warren was, but I think Kamala and Joe were a good team. However, I think what they are is a good transitional team toward greater change in the future, because we've really got to have more of a Bernie Sanders and Warren kind of agenda sometime taking hold in the next decade in this country to put an end to this horrific inequality and to put an end to the misogyny and the racism, at least as much of an end as can be put to any of this, but to really lay to rest some of the horrible policies or failures to enact policies that we badly need to level the playing fields. I see the best that can happen right now is a strong transitional team for us to get us to somebody else, other leaders. Hopefully Biden will begin to really make room for some of those more progressive leaders immediately, like AOC and others. I mean, I think we need those people's voices, those younger voices, certainly voices of color, certainly all the diversity we can possibly get in there that has good sense. And when we really do need to have the white men and white women like myself who kind of get it, who understand that this is no longer a white world, and it shouldn't be, it can't be, it won't be, and it's good that it's not. Doesn't mean that we need to dispense with ourselves. We can be part of the whole, but that's all we are, is part of a whole. And that's the kind of world we're looking for. Not to be best, but to be good. Make America good enough. That's all we need. We need to be a good enough nation. We need to be inclusive and diverse. If Trump won't relinquish power or refuses to go, I don't know what we do. This is where I find myself just thinking out loud here. I think many of us have said to each other over the last 3 or 4 years, we hope that somewhere in the mix, some of the military in this country have got enough sense not to stand with him. Because, you know, we have such a horrifically powerful military. I'm not an admirer of the military and our adventures all over the globe throughout my lifetime. But we do have a powerful military, and I do understand that in the military, there are some good, moral, decent human beings and some good leadership. And I hope that those people are having this same conversation about what are we going to do if refuses to relinquish power. Every group in this nation, religious group, political group, educational group that is of sound mind will have to come together to get him out of there. And we're going to hopefully not be up against a military force. I mean, I hope the military would stand with us and would just quietly remove him and take him away somewhere. You know, he just needs to be gone out of sight, out of mind, and I hope put in jail. But it'd be great if we could have a bloodless revolution. That's what we all want. But the people are going to have to speak up. And people, I don't know how we do this in COVID with all this distancing we have to do, but we're going to have to somehow figure out how to make our voices heard and make ourselves a powerful force that will not accept whatever Trump has up his sleeves.
I think that the danger is real of what's going to happen with this election. It really is a question of what form of rule we're going to have in this country. Whether there is even the pretend illusory democracy or whether it really is a total fascist police.
Right. If he wins, it's going to become full-blown fascism.
And that's what's at stake. And I think those who are around him, like you said at the beginning, he has a whole cabal, and they have been the movement that he now leads. They've been at work for this for decades. Yeah. And this is really their last stand. If they're not able to consolidate this time, they're going to be set back. And so they're holding on to it with everything that they've got. And they're acknowledging that it may not be enough to do the usual voter suppression and gerrymandering and all of that. The fact that they're sending out all these poll watchers, intimidators, they're already telling you they're stealing this election.
That's right. And all this post office stuff.
During a time of COVID.
I know. I mean, it's just in plain view. In plain view, you have Trump saying, well, you know, if we give them money, they'll be able to use the post office to mail in their ballots. And so if we don't give them the money, they can't do that. So that's good. And it's like, excuse me, you can't believe your ears. You can't believe somebody's actually saying something so corrupt.
So blatant, you actually can't ignore it. And if you are, the level that people are still having fascism, denialism, it is as dangerous and unscientific as climate change denialism at this point, because it's right in front of your face. One thing where I see possibility is that if people were in growing numbers, really a force, yeah, raising the demand that we're not going to accept this, that he needs to go, and that they do it before the election, that it can change the political equation going into the election, making it harder for him to easily postpone or subvert the election. If you had a whole autumn of people raising this demand, being in the streets, yes, wearing masks, yes, socially distancing, but being in the streets, asserting their power, saying, we're not going to let you discount our votes, we're not going to let you dismiss the results, you could have a struggle where millions do see through the ouster of this regime. And no one can say how far that could go in terms of making more people within the regime held accountable, and what other positive things that could bring into being, and how fast. I mean, in Puerto Rico, not this past summer, but the summer before, you look at when people took to the streets night after night, saying, I'm trying to remember the governor's name right now, saying that he would, I think it was Ricky was the governor, he renuncio or something like that.
Yeah.
They were calling on him to resign. Yeah. I'm just saying that when you have people out and you've got a broad base, you have people of all religious perspectives, you've got all nationalities, all political perspectives, all saying, we may not agree on a lot of things, but we agree he's got to go and we won't let him steal the election, then you change the equation. And the international community takes note too. I think we're going to be in a bad situation if we don't, and we're relying on these norms and channels that Trump has no respect for, that he's trampled for 4 years. He's told us that the law is whatever he says it is. Who's going to deal with the contested election? The Supreme Court that he's stacked? Who's going to take him out? The military, where he's purged the people that don't agree with him so that you only have loyalists? That's why I'm concerned about relying on the military, besides the fact when you talk about the military, then you're in a...
I know. I mean, that is a scary thing.
That's a scary thing too. So I think we have to rely on ourselves. And what gives me hope is the fact that there still are millions who, despite the normalization, there are millions that hate what Trump stands for.
And who don't accept
what he's done.
If
they are able to make themselves manifest in all their diversity and a little bit of courage, I think that we could really change the course of history.
And what you're saying is very interesting. And of course, this is exactly what these Moral Mondays have become. You never can tell what will happen on any Monday. You don't know who's going to wind up leading it. We always do our 8 minutes and 46 seconds of silence, during which at least half the people take a knee, just an 8 minute, 40 second tribute and memorial to George Floyd and all the victims. And then one young woman or another gets up and says the names of 50 or 60 African-Americans and brown people who've been killed by the police just in the last 10 years and says a little bit about who each one was. You know, this was the 46-year-old father of three, you know, had just finished his such and such a job. You hear about them. And then after that, usually one of us will give a statement about something. This last week, it was about the post office. But there's always some kind of primary focus that we're just lifting up. And then the mic is open and people come up, and some people come up and sing songs, some come up and give speeches. Right at the end, this African-American grandfather came up. I didn't know him at all. He comes up and he says that he's got to speak because he's got this grandson who's standing right over here that he worries about because he's black. And so then the grandson came and spoke. And so you had the grandfather and the grandson both giving these passionate speeches about being Black in this country at this time. Most everybody has signs about voting, some masks that just say vote. And so it's really quite something. And tomorrow we're actually having an action at the post office. It's going to be a combination of expressing our solidarity with postal workers so that they'll know that we're there and we've told them we're coming. But we'll have some signs about them, but then we'll also have signs about refusing to have the election stolen and that, you know, you will not take away this constitutional right of ours to the U.S. mail, that we will not permit this. And then every Monday we get out there and do something like that. And we are pledged to do this every single week, at least once between now and November the 3rd. And then I have a feeling we'll go right on beyond November the 3rd, certainly to January the 20th, and maybe beyond then, depending on what's really happening. I saw the September the 5th, the link you sent. I was reading that with great interest. Yes to that. And I think that having written this article, I'm not at all confident that everybody would sign off to sort of participate in any organization that does name fascism as the problem. Some of us will. I don't know about some, because people are still, they'll get out there, they're going to get out there and take these actions, which is great. But people are leery still of what they hear as the really, really, really scary words. So I have a feeling we have some more groundwork to be laying here in Brevard, North Carolina, to get people in the next several weeks or months sort of more on board to be saying what they mean and meaning what they say.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
You're welcome.
It was a real treat to come across the piece that you wrote. I have Google Alerts set up on my phone for the word fascism so that I can read all these different things. And every now and then you find such a gem that way you would never know about. Your piece was one of those gems. So I thank Google Alerts.
I'm glad you found it. And it's an honor and a delight to talk with you, to know you're there. And I personally will stay in touch with the organization.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to take that link and send it on to several of my colleagues. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it. We are a little mountain town. So, I mean, you know, I looked at all the Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia.
We need to change it so that there's a vision of all those little spots.
Yeah, Brevard. Little Brevard can have an action. And somehow it seems to me there ought to be a way found for us to link up with you, even if people in our group are a little reluctant to get too close to what they're going to fear may be something they just can't quite deal with yet. These are good liberal Democrats. That's all I can tell you is we're probably having the same kind of tensions among us that the Democratic Party has among itself. So we just have to work it out. We are really, truly on the same side. This is not optional.
We have to use every nonviolent tool in our toolkit.
We do. And it's not, you know, it's like Gore and Bush. I mean, that was a pretty dreadful thing too, but that was in a different league. I mean, this is infinitely worse than that was. And of course,
but I think part of that is the fact that we didn't stop them then.
I know.
And that they were never held accountable.
Well, that, as you said, that's been going on for decades.
The fact that Bush was never tried with war crimes and crimes against humanity made it so that road was paved. And even progressive Christian, what the vicious Christian fundamentalists did during Bush set the stage for what Trump has done on a whole other level in terms of in a very ugly form.
Absolutely.
Hatred of hatred.
Did you by any chance see the thing in the New York Times last about the Christians? It was like,
yes.
When he says, if I'm elected, we will rise to power. You will power. I thought, holy shit. There's as many kind of Christians as there are people of any other religion, but it just makes me think. I have, from the time, even when I was a kid living in North Carolina, my parents were good kind of moderate Christians. They would be having a fit right now about how Christianity is being used because they saw Christianity as a real religion about following Jesus, who was a person of peace and of justice. And I mean, they really did see him. They didn't use the word liberator, but they that's what they saw, and that's what I grew up believing, is that this is a liberating figure in the world, if we understand this right. Love without justice is not love. So loving one's neighbor is making justice.
It's why all the Christians who do not want this to be the Christianity that the world sees from America have the obligation, the moral obligation to speak up and to speak out and to say this is not in our name. Unfortunately, still people like you are the minority.
We're not heard as controversial. I mean, we're controversial on the right. They can't stand us, and they don't even see us as Christians. They think we're, I don't know what they think. What they think we're all secular humanists or whatever they call us, which we are too. I'm very happy to be called a secular humanist. But yeah, that we're not really Christians in the eyes of these right-wing Christians. You're right. We have to speak. And a matter of fact, even though I'm an Episcopal priest, I go to a Unitarian church here in this town. And I'm in the process of talking with our new pastor about seeing if I can do a couple of presentations in the next couple of months about this very thing, you know, on Sunday mornings, which is not often when preachers preach this kind of political stuff, but we have to.
I was raised conservative Jew, you know, like.
Well, that's very good. One of my heroes, all-time heroes, was Rabbi Abraham Heschel, who was teaching at the Jewish Theological Seminary while I was a student across the street at the Union Theological Seminary. And Rabbi Heschel and Martin Buber, I mean, these great Jewish scholars and activists helped shape my generation of young Christian liberation theologians. Had I ever thought that Christianity and Judaism and Islam and other religions of the world were somehow contrary to one another, that would have been laid to rest then. It was just like one universalist movement for justice and goodness and peace and righteousness. And didn't make any difference whether we're Jews or Christians or Muslims. But you're right, we're all in the minority right now when it comes to the loud public religious voices that are fascist. In fact, one thing I'll say before I go is that behind this article is also, when I mentioned Dorothea Zola, the German theologian, she said when Ronald Reagan took the reins of power in 1981, she said to me, she said, I worry that this nation is going to become a Christo-fascist nation. Christo-fascist, one word, or maybe a hyphenated word, depending upon how you write it, but basically fascism being mounted in the name of Christ. That was her concern as a Christian. And that would be my concern as a Christian now too, is that to have fascism on the rise using the Jesus story in the name of Christ to legitimize itself is the ultimate blasphemy. It's just evil. It's just plain evil. It's like the devil wearing sheep's clothing. That's the other word. I mean, we don't use the word evil often enough. Fascism and evil. We talk about wrongdoing and authoritarianism. And, you know, there are a lot of almost synonyms for these things. But evil is a harsh word and fascism is a harsh word. But they are apt right now.
That was Reverend Dr. Carter Hayward. A link to her article is in the show notes. Now we'll share a clip of this past week's RNL show, where actor Jody Sweetin speaks about her involvement with RefuseFascism.org and how she sees the importance of taking to the streets on September 5 to demand Trump-Pence out now.
So I'm out here with Jody Sweetin, and I want to say thanks for coming on the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Absolutely. I have been following along with you guys over the past few months and what your mission is. And I'm really committed to what you guys stand for and, you know, creating awareness and educating people. So thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to sit and chat politics with you.
That's actually exactly what we were doing. We just finished filming. You did a very powerful reading of the call for the protest on September 5th from Refuse Fascism.
Yes.
And we were sitting having some conversation off of that and thought, man, we should film this. And so we're doing the interview.
Yes.
And so I wanted to start by just asking you why you decided to join with this effort from Refuse Fascism and what you thought, what stood out to you the most, what you think is most needs to sink in with people about this call for protests on September 5th to demand Trump-Pence out now.
Well, I know that the reason that I really have felt myself so aligned with the movement of RevComs and Refuse Fascism was because it was exactly what I have been saying since Trump began running for office, which was this is a dangerous slide into fascism without use of hyperbole of actual fascist open dictatorship in America. And what frightened me is how many people were completely in denial of that. And so throughout the time of his first election and since then, the 3 years and 9 months or so, it's been just the repeated chipping away of the institutions that we have come to know as so American. A lot of them need to go. We need to have a completely restructured system, but watching them be dismantled in front of our eyes with so many people purposefully staying blind to it has been terrifying. And so over these past few months, I've become much more active out in the streets with Black Lives Matter, with Refuse Fascism. And I just really hope that people will start listening and educating themselves. We are not screaming fascism because we're trying to be extreme. We're screaming it because it's happening. And that should scare everyone.
You were talking earlier about some of the particular features of this, even going back to Trump campaigning and getting people to chant, lock her up. What does it mean that he's threatening his opponent this way? You were talking about the rule of law and the restructuring of that, or norms. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be helpful, as you understand it, how do you see this fascism advancing? What are the things you think people need to start identifying in a different way than they have?
When people started crying fascism, even those on the left felt that it was too strong a word, that we were comparing him to Hitler and to the Nazis. What those of us on the left were really trying to say is Hitler and the Nazis started just like this. It started with small things and getting rid of the normal rule of law. Every day we wake up to a president who tweets some of the most untrue, horrific, absurd, violent, demeaning things. And we've come to accept that. And in doing so, he has allowed the systems that we have relied upon of democracy and fairness and justice, he's shredded them. He's shredded them before our eyes, and he continues to do it, and we continue to allow it. What was done with the Supreme Courts with Mitch McConnell, even before Trump left office, those things are signs of impending fascism. When you start messing with the courts and not calling witnesses to an impeachment trial, my God, we had an impeachment of a president where no one said anything. We weren't allowed to look at information. I couldn't understand why everyone wasn't jumping up and down in the streets and saying, no, no, we refuse to accept this. We refuse. I think people were like, oh, this is crazy. But there was nothing after that. And so they have been slowly turning up the volume on dismantling our courts, sending in federal troops, unnamed, unidentified. They have been taking people from the streets who are protesting. They're trying to get them to give up their First Amendment rights, that they will release them, but they can't protest any further. Things like that that are such infringements on the things that we have said are American ideals. Where are we standing up for that now? Where are the things that we have held so dear? And we're just allowing them to be ripped from our hands is what I see what's going on right now.
Refuse Fascism has called for these protests September 5th. What would you like to see that day across this country? And what difference do you think it would make and can make for people to actually stand up and raise the demand, Trump, Pence out now? I think people need a vision of what's possible.
I think that, as we've talked about before, people rely heavily on the election. But I think that the moment that we started discussing what if the election doesn't happen, what if he delegitimizes the election, I think the moment we even started having those thoughts as possibilities is the moment that we have to demand them out now. Because the moment that we start having those discussions means that the moment is here that we think it's even possible. And if we think it, so do they. What I would love to see on September 5th is that those people who have been saying that Trump needs to go and we're waiting for the election, I think what we have to understand is that this election depends not just on the ballots that are sent in on Election Day, on November 3rd. This election depends on the movement and the swell and the momentum that we have from now until that day to continue sustained mass protest across the board, not just the people that have been out in the streets protesting for the last couple of months, but the people who are really becoming more and more aware of sort of the web of fascism that is infiltrating all of our American systems of government and justice. And the reason that we've always said the power to the people and that the people have the majority of the voice is because we do. You know, the more of us that stand up and don't just wring our hands at home or write an ugly Facebook post, that actually get out in the streets and say, I will not accept this. This is not the America that I stand for. It requires action. It cannot come from sitting idly by. There is nothing that power fears more than people joined together. And I think we need to remind people of that. We greatly outnumber, and our passion has to stand for something. And we have to stand against this out in the streets with our voices, with our bodies. We have to be out there. It's really hard for a regime to be overthrown and to leave if everyone's sitting at home. And I know that nobody wants to go out during all of this right now, but what are people willing to accept and become? What atrocities are you willing to see on the news and to see on Facebook and to see in your Instagram feed? What things are you comfortable seeing day in and day out before you do something? We've been in the streets protesting the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and all of these people, but we need to remind ourselves that the ultimate goal is that this regime that is behind all of that and pushing all of that forward has to go, and it has to go now. Because by the time we get to January of next year, our election has happened, it's too late. This isn't for fun, we're not playing. This is the definite future of our country, of humanity, and of our world is at stake. I don't think we can fully wrap our minds quite around just what is at stake at this election. And if we begin to rest on our laurels, then nothing's gonna change except for the worse.
That was actor Jodi Sweet. You can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Jodi Sweetin, where you will see she has urged her followers to donate to Refuse Fascism. We also heard from Zansara Taylor. You can catch her interviews on a weekly basis on the RNL Show on YouTube, and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Zansara Taylor. I want to talk for a bit now about how you can help organize to make the nationwide day of protests on September 5 happen. This day needs to be a living declaration by people in this country that we are determined, we are organizing, we are uniting, we are preparing to struggle with all we've got, starting now and not stopping until this regime is gone from power and the fascist program it is bludgeoning into place is indeed stopped. Calling on you to be on a mission now to spread the word far and wide and organize like the future depends on it, so that September 5th, a day that begins an autumn of growing mass nonviolent struggle of many different kinds, demanding the Trump-Pence regime must go, is a reality. And to do that, I ask you to donate. Refuse Fascism is fueled by volunteers, donating their time and energy, but also by people like you, contributing whatever amount they are able, as much as they are able. Nothing happens without funds, whether it's the website we use to coordinate and announce plans, or the email list, or the flyers and stickers you see broadcasting the demand Trump Pence out now. When you give to Refuse Fascism, you know that every cent is needed and will count. Invite the people in your life who care about humanity and the planet to join you in donating and help fuel this movement. Right now, we need to be plastering social media with word about September 5th. Help make that happen. Go right now. Venmo, Refuse-Fascism. Cash App, Refuse Fascism. Go to the website, refusefascism.org. Donate now or view instructions for making a tax-deductible donation by mail. While you're at refusefascism.org, find a protest planned for your area. There's a map that you can find with protests across the country. There are a couple weeks to go to spread the word. So as soon as you find where your protest is, spread it on social media. If you don't see a protest planned in your area, get in touch. You can host one right on the website. Put in your time and your city, and let us know where you'll be demanding Trump Pence out now. We will help promote your plans, and if you've never organized something like this before, we're there to help you think through the challenges and obstacles to making something like this happen in your area in the way that it needs to be. Be brave, be willing to ask others to help,
and you will be surprised by what you can do. If you need help, call 917-407-1286 or email info@refusefascism.org. On the website, you can find resources for spreading the word online and in real life. Posters to print, graphics to share, along with articles to help deepen your understanding of what we face in this fascist Trump-Pence regime and why being in the streets right now matters so much. Thanks for listening to Inside Without Now. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. See you in the streets.